On Sunday in Scotland, Northern Ireland and Northern England, variable but often quite a lot of cloud, despite this mainly dry. Good sunny spells again elsewhere in England and for Wales, with temperatures up on Saturday's readings, somewhere may get to 30. But bear in mind, high UV in the sun this weekend and high to very high pollen levels. Sunscreen required and a few sneezes filling the air as we slowly melt. Alan.
Thanks, Nick. This is BBC Radio 4, where now it's time for our late book, and Chipu Chung concludes her reading of The Cooked Seed. An Ximin still hasn't secured her elusive green card, but she's met a fellow Chinese student with whom she's making plans for the future.
Kim Lau's real estate sign was the biggest in Chinatown. His small eyes darted excitedly behind his glasses as he spoke. You'll be considered high risk by any bank because you don't have regular jobs. But what American banks don't know is that Chinese honor their debts. I know a private lender, a Taiwanese lady. She'll charge you higher than an American bank, but you will have the loan. A few days later, Mr. Lau showed us a half-vacant apartment property on South Union Street. Qigu and I could hardly believe that we were actually house hunting in America. The property had 5 units, 3 in the front and 2 in the back. The price reflects its condition, Mr. Lau said. We walked home with our heads buzzing. If we fixed up the building and rented out the units, not only would we be able to cover the mortgage, but we could also live in one of the units free. It would be an American dream come true. When Mr. Lau congratulated us on closing the deal on the property, I started to panic. It would only take one tenant to miss his rent and we wouldn't be able to pay the mortgage. Qigu believed that good things would happen if only I relaxed. I'd been in America for 5 years and a green card remained a dream. I'd been willing to crawl on all fours. Now, I'd done what my parents told me never to do. I lived with a man who was not my husband, and I was in debt beyond their wildest imagination. The day after we bought the property, we discovered 2 homeless men living in the vacant units. They were drunk in a room filled with leftover pizzas and empty liquor bottles. They complained there was no water. The toilet was filled with waste. Because the building hadn't been properly heated during the winter, the pipes had burst. We told them they'd have to move out while we fixed the house. The condition of the front 3 units was worse than it had first appeared. An old Italian woman got down on her immaculate kitchen floor and began to imitate a bug. There were cockroaches. 2 Mexican men on the 3rd floor told us the building's electric system was shot. It makes popping sounds. Qigu and I discussed the cost of an electrician whilst walking back to the building that evening. Fire would be a serious hazard if we tried to fix the electrics ourselves, I said. As the word fire rolled off my tongue, like in a disaster movie, I saw a roof in flames. It can't be our property, I yelled. We just bought it, and without any insurance. Weeks later, we heard that one of the homeless men had admitted he'd set the fire. Qigu and I worked on repairing the damage for the entire year. We had no money to buy power tools, and we couldn't afford to hire help. We slept in the attic, and to keep our legal status, we continued our schooling. We gutted the section of roof where the fire had burnt through. The irony was that the labor camp in China had prepared me for this. I did the heavy carrying because Qigu had injured his neck in a car accident. When it was time to tackle the plumbing, we became partners in the delicate work of soldering. I wasn't looking forward to my 34th birthday. I felt stuck and in a rut. I longed for a family and children, but it had become obvious that Qigu had no interest in proposing to me. He explained that he'd never make enough money to provide for a family. It would be irresponsible to you, society, and the child. I could no longer ignore the sad fact that Chigu and I weren't in love. We'd been sleeping in the bed we made. The mortgage contract was under both of our names. Meanwhile, the repair job had turned into a nightmare. It felt strange to be called owners when we were really servants and laborers. When I failed to get accepted for the PhD course that I thought might help me to get a green card, Chigu had no sympathy. A PhD doesn't suit you. You're an original. Your talent's inborn. I blinked at him. What kind of talent are you talking about? Fixing toilets? Mixing concrete? He pointed at a pile of my sketches. Look at you. Poetry comes with you. You hear the music and your eyes see beauty. You're burying your talent. I was touched. This man believed with all his heart that I was born to be extraordinary. But he'd never said he loved me. I'd hate to see you give up, he said quietly. I finished reading my English teacher's book, I said. The one who's published 3 novels, what do you think? He's a fine writer, but his material's pale. I didn't understand what he meant by calling me a lousy writer with excellent material until I read his book. Chigu beamed. Wow, this is the best thing I've heard you say. Do you think you can make a better writer given your material? I can try, but I don't know where to start. The piece you did for your English class about your labor camp experience, it's a piece of art in my judgment. Chigu went to the library every week to keep his sanity. He brought back art books. His favorites were a modern Italian painter called Francesco Clemente and the American artist Jean-Michel Basquiat. He said it would do me good to look at their works because he believed I spoke a similar language. He did me a big favor. I fell in love with their work. I was inspired. Memories became so alive that my past flooded my mind. Before I knew what was happening, I couldn't escape my memories. I realized that I could be the book. All my life I'd been a soldier whose job was to kill pain. I was proud of being strong. I locked up memories and allowed no place in my heart for feelings because I believed that I couldn't afford to be weak. And yet, as I struggled to write, I discovered that my soul had a mind of its own. It wandered to the wrong neighborhoods as I followed a memory I was trying to capture. As the hidden pain came to the surface, I was disarmed. Silent and wounded, I watched myself flat on the ground, enduring the internal bleeding. I'd never tasted the bitterness of guilt, regret, and remorse until then. I was haunted by those I'd left behind, my labor camp comrades, Little Green and Yan. My heart began to burn with the desire to tell their stories. Little Green died when she was 18. I was the one who discovered her drowned body. I couldn't face the fact that I'd failed to rescue her. I began to write like a mad person. There became no day or night. Chigu moved downstairs to get away. I wrote on buses, on subways, in between classes. My pockets were filled with notes. The backs of my hands and forearms were covered with ink characters in Chinese. When the ink touched the surface of paper, I felt alive. When I finished my manuscript, I sat on the attic floor and looked out of the window, struck by the beauty of the white night. I knew no publisher would accept a handwritten manuscript, but Chigu and I could barely afford to eat after paying the mortgage. One Sunday morning at the flea market on Maxwell Street, we happened upon an old-fashioned typewriter on sale for $6. I mailed out my manuscript to a dozen publishers, but received no response. I ran out of money for copying and returned to work as a plumber. One afternoon, I received a postcard from a literary agent. The first line told me that the agency didn't accept unpublished authors. The second suggested that I try to get a shorter version of my work published in a magazine first. Chigu and I looked for ads for writing competitions. The problem was that $25 to enter a short story contest was more than I could afford. Finally, I discovered a contest that only charged $5 and another that required no entry fee at all. 3 months later, I heard that my story, Wild Chrysanthemums, would be published as a reward for winning a contest in the Mississippi Valley Review. Later, Granta Magazine said it would publish Red Fire Farm. With these credits, I contacted publishers and agencies again. There was no response. After a year and a half, I figured it wasn't meant to be. I was disappointed, but I was American enough not to take it as a personal disgrace. I was in the midst of fixing a leaky toilet when the phone rang and a lady's voice asked for A.J. "Who are you?" I asked, realizing too late that I should have said, "Who is this, please?" The lady introduced herself as Sandra Dykstra. Between the distraction of regretting my bad phone manners and juggling my plumbing tools, I caught the key word. Agency. What kind of agency? She sounded like an authority figure. Could she be an immigration officer calling about my visa status? Was I going to be deported? Hello? This is An Chi Min. How did you know my phone number? Do you remember about a year and a half ago you submitted your manuscript, Red Azalea, to the Sandra Dykstra Literary Agency? Well, I'm Sandy, and I'm interested in meeting you. She explained she was on her way to New York, stopping by in Chicago for a night, and would be available for a breakfast meeting at her hotel. I felt I might be hallucinating. I'll come. Like a spring breeze, Sandra Dykstra walked into the hotel's restaurant. She had bright eyes and an affectionate smile. "I got up at dawn this morning and reread your manuscript. Fantastic work. I'd like to try your luck in New York. What do you say?" I don't remember how I drove back home. Excitedly, I described my meeting to Chigu, concluding, "I don't expect anything to come of it." Life went back to normal. The weather warmed up, and Chigu and I were forced to fight a new battle. Termites were discovered in our building. Sandra Dykstra phoned again. "How are you, An Chi Min? What are you doing?" I wasn't sure if I should tell her that Chigu and I were working on the plumbing, and he was waiting with a propane torch. "Are you sitting down?" she asked. I wondered why it mattered. "I can if you want me to, though I have to sit on the floor because there's no chair here." "Never mind. Listen, I'm in the middle of auctioning Red Azalea. 5 publishers have joined the bidding. I've narrowed it down to the final 2. Both are great houses. My question is, would you like me to go with Random House or Knopf?" How could I possibly have any idea? "Will you kindly decide for me?" "Sure. And there's an author's advance." "What does advance mean?" She started to explain. I asked Chigu for a pen, but I could barely hold it. My fingers were so stiff with cold. I wasn't sure if I was translating right. I wondered if Sandy meant $5,000 or $7,000. It couldn't be this much money. "Is it 10 or 2 zeros after the number 75? I asked. 3 zeros, honey. Just beat it, beat it, beat it. Beat it, beat it, beat it.
Chipo Chung has been reading The Cooked Seed by An Chi Min. The programme was abridged and produced for BBC Radio 4 by Jane Marshall Productions. This is BBC Radio 4. It's 12 minutes to 1. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency. A 0015 today, Saturday the 6th of July. There are warnings of gales in Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Atlantic low 979, moving rather quickly northeast. Expected 100 miles north northeast of Iceland 985 by 1800 Saturday. High Humber 1031, expected German Bight 1032 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking North Utsira. Southerly or southwesterly 4 or 5, increasing 6 or 7 for a time in the north. Rain later, good, occasionally poor later. South Utsira. Variable through.